Hey, everybody, and welcome to the new and improved Human Reaction podcast, where it's always our mission to arm you with the knowledge and mental models you need to fight media misdirection and end the mononarrative. We are happy to be upgrading our show this week from a weekly recap to shorter, single-topic deep dives on current events. This is in hopes of making our episodes more digestible and enjoyable for our listeners and viewers. We hope you enjoy it. And for members, have no fear. We will be always producing the high-quality content that you expect. If you would like to become a member and get this exclusive content, please go to humanreactionpod.com. All right, let's get into the show. I am happy to be joined by my usual co-hosts, David Rand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett on the buttons. How are you doing today, boys?
Doing great. Good. Now I got a camera for Bennett. Look at that handsome guy. Look at
this guy back here.
That beard looking majestic.
Yeah, the beard looks good. Everything else, not so much.
You know, the beard really gives you like a hint of, you know, honorary ginger vibe going on.
Yeah, no, so I have a red beard.
It's quite red, yeah. I'm surprised.
So I've literally filled in for all of you. I've got the redhead covered. I had the bald covered at one point. And I've made fun of libertarians once. So I got all of you guys down.
All right, David, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, so we have the election postmortem, and man, what an election season it was, right? Yeah. What a doozy. I feel like the results of the election as they come in are kind of like we, as a country, were tested for STDs and it came back negative, right? Like, it was like we're almost there.
Sweet,
I guess.
I mean, I think for half the country that's true. For the other half, it's probably positive.
Yeah, right. That's the other half is villain. Republicans gained the Senate, and we're finding out what's going to happen with the House. And now that we're kind of through that battle, we want to understand what happened this year, especially now as all of the analysis of the elections have rolled in. Who voted? Who didn't vote? Why did they vote? What are the motivations? That's what we'll be digging into today.
But before we jump into it all, I just want to present this lovely meme from our Discord. Go join our Discord. But we have two Canadian Mounties asking where the celebrities are, and they haven't found a single one yet.
Not a single one, sir.
It's my motherland. They're willing to accept all the celebrity immigrants, but they just can't. Nobody's shown up yet.
Well, you know, I think they've probably got to, you know, get some affairs in order, right? Yeah. Burn all the documents and then book some plane tickets and...
Well, first they have to virtue signal on social media about how crazy and how awful that America is because we elected a dictator, Nazi Hitler. You
know? Yes, they have to participate in the public weeping, and then they can
They have to go through the ritual.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is true. If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com, that's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
So I guess as we move into this, election results, Trump won.
Hooray. Cheers to that.
If you haven't heard.
Cheers to that.
I think
we're all excited about it.
From what I heard was that some people were very surprised that Joe Biden was on the ballot. Google search terms spiked. Where did Joe Biden go?
Yeah. Did Joe Biden drop out?
Yeah.
Was the Google trend?
Who's this Kamala lady?
Absolutely going nuclear on election day. I imagine that probably had an impact on the way people voted. Don't you think?
Oh,
to
for
see,
sure.
To see Kamala on the ballot instead of Joe Biden,
they're
like,
still confused. And yeah, we could dive into some of that too later when we look at the election turnout numbers and kind of how many people voted for Biden and then didn't show up at all. And then we have people who showed up at the polls and then were surprised to see Kamala was on the ballot, which is strange.
I know we're in an echo chamber and we're very involved in politics, but like, how much of a rock do you have to live under to not know that Joe Biden was not running for president?
Corollary question. How many of those people knew that Donald Trump was almost assassinated and
very
didn't know that Biden pulled out? And that might be explain a lot of the actual total shift to the right.
Yeah.
If people didn't realize that Kamala was president, but did realize that Donald Trump was shot in his attempt to become president.
Yeah.
That might be a big explanation.
Very strange stuff. Let's have a look at a map here and see how things turned out.
Oh, it worked. Yay. Hey. All right, we got new tech stack, guys. I got a little confused while everyone else was talking.
David's a boomer. It's fine. We'll bear with him.
Hey. So we currently have Trump at 295. We still have Nevada, which does look solidly Republican, although it hasn't been called yet, and Arizona, which looks solid as well. When you look at this map and you see the kind of the black mixing with the red, these are the states that Trump flipped. So he flipped every necessary swing state.
Wow.
And if it's looking like Trump's going to hit 312, right, which is a pretty resounding victory.
I'd say so.
Enormous. Right. I mean, if you were taking bets beforehand, there were some people who predicted this, right? I predicted he would get Pennsylvania and Georgia and Nevada and Arizona, but I did not think Wisconsin and Michigan went that way. But it does look like a resounding victory on all those fronts. I mean, it was pretty close. Wisconsin's only within 1%. Both of them are within 1%. Like, he edged out those states.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they were much wider margins coming into the 70-80 range of percentage of votes counted. So those must have closed with the final vote tallies.
More urban districts basically coming in.
Gotcha.
And we're still, according to reports, there's still boxes full left to be counted and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think...
Truckloads full, in fact.
Yeah. I don't think we'll see a change in the outcome based upon that, but it's understandable. We're still at greater than 95% of total amount of votes counted in these states. So that's where that... As far as for the Senate is pretty much made up at this point. We still have, of course, Nevada, which looks, you know, solidly in the blue camp, but that's, you know, it's only tens of thousands of votes left to go. And then Carrie looks like she lost Arizona, but you know they're still counting.
Now, is that an anomaly there that Trump was elected at the top of the ticket, but Carrie Lake did not win underneath that?
Well, it's a different split ticket voting. I don't know. It depends. So I've always associated split ticket voting with Montana specifically because I'm a specialist in that area. But it maybe that's becoming more common across the states. There's always a difference in coverage of the top of the ticket versus lower down ticket. So there's more information, a richer information environment at the top of the ticket, which does tend to swing people that way, right? But like Kyle was saying on the live stream, and if you missed live stream, you really missed out.
7 hours, crazy.
It's a lot of content. Kyle was mentioning the live stream just to the degree that Arizona politics is definitely bifurcated on the neoconservative line because of the history of John McCain.
Right.
And to what degree, Carrie Lake was a bit of a repudiation of that tradition of the more and of the Republican establishment there. So maybe she didn't get the same kind of support. And maybe there was just less positive media coverage.
The sense that I get in Arizona, and I was just there about a month ago, and the sheer amount of ads, a lot of abortion ads, like every 15 minutes on TV, three abortion ads. Carrie Lake is too radical on abortion. Like, it's just, and paid for by the super PAC that was involved with John McCain and all his people, right? And so it's like Republican, neoconservative super PACs paying for all the attack ads on Carrie Lake. And they have like institutional control in that state, from what it seems like.
Wow.
And also, she's very much a firebrand, and there's like, she's got kind of that 2016 Trumpian energy that I think turns a lot of people away. So it's kind of like you're either really like her or you really hate her. Mm-hmm. And if you're a middle of the road voter that's just kind of paying attention to the ads you're seeing, you're probably leaning against her.
Yeah.
I also think she has a mixed reputation amongst the Trump crowd themselves. Mm-hmm. Her background is a very confused. Like, she was a
former Democrat
at one point, former Democrat. She was a news broadcaster, all that kind of stuff. Really,
she's a pretty famous news broadcaster.
That's why she was such a popular candidate in many ways. But also, she doesn't have like the cred kind of. Yeah. She hasn't been fully embraced by the Trump crowd as much
as other candidates. What was the thing that we played a few episodes ago? Like that recording between her and somebody else within the
some shadowy.
Yeah, yeah. It was the chair of the Arizona Republican Party.
Do you think I don't remember, or the
RNC or something like that? The Republican Party within Arizona, where he was trying to get her to drop out of the race and take some cushy corporate job or consulting gig to not run this cycle.
Come back in 6 years,
right?
That or yeah,
something right. Yeah. Like that was for this election.
That was for this election. Right. Yes.
So it was like a year ago. It was like when I think it was before she had ever announced or something too. I can't remember the exact
I want to say it was just about a year ago. Yeah. Yeah, and obviously she didn't, and obviously, well, it didn't really work out for her, so she should have taken the corporate gig.
Do you think that played a role? Like, did they, I don't know, not sabotage, but like not maybe give the funding they would normally give or stuff that?
I would think David would probably have a lot of insight on this, but like, you know, Kyle, you mentioned that super PACs were running basically abortion ads against Carrie Lake in Arizona. I imagine that the Republican Party in Arizona would have a bit of say over what the PACs do in sort of a nebulous sense. Obviously they can't directly collaborate, but
they're very establishment John McCain types. Like what? That it's sort of like the Lincoln Project. Like it's those types of people. Like it's that ideological base that basically flipped Democrat in the Trump era.
Do you think that they contributed to that?
I don't know about this election cycle, but we do know in 2020 that McConnell PACs definitely spent against candidates that were of the Carrie Lake variety. Hmm. So I don't know, and that was mostly in the primary, and then the withheld funds throughout the general election and didn't really engage. Meanwhile, the Trump organization ate up a lot of spending at that point as well. We talked about that when we were covering the last cycle. So I think, I suspect that we'll probably see a greater spend out of the Democrats. That seems true everywhere this election cycle. The Democrats got a ton of money this year. Kamala herself got support from how many billionaires? It's like 75 billionaires. Wow. Like it's a tremendous amount of spending.
I mean, she raised $1 billion, $1 billion.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys saw still ended up $20 million in the hole. And there's a bit of a controversy and scandal around the situation of subcontractors of all sorts who were involved with their campaign doing various activities, couldn't pay their staff, had to lay people off. I mean, it seems like kind of a bit of a problem.
Bit of a cluster.
Yeah.
Carrie Lake's also a big, they stole the election person. She's one of the biggest in the country.
Right.
Especially when because Maricopa County is always one of the ones that has all of the problems and has all the people kind of blaming in Arizona. And there's a lot of people in kind of that when she ran before and when Blake Masters ran before, there's a lot of questions that still exist. And she's somebody that's constantly bringing those up. And people in the middle don't really like hearing about it. They don't like hearing questions about that in any way. And I think that turns a lot of people off.
Yeah, I think it probably comes off as a bit fringe these mm-hmm. days. Well, I mean, in general anyways. And yeah, wasn't she sponsoring like lawsuits and stuff over that in Maricopa County?
She's one of the biggest people in the country on that stuff, probably.
So the other one is the House, which is still not called yet. We are currently at the Democrats at 199 and Republicans at 211. I need 218 to control the House. And obviously, Republicans are closer, but the Democrats could make up that gap. We're looking at, and I don't know enough about these candidates to be able to say, but we still have quite a few marginal votes that could go either way, with poll leading on Republicans having the advantage, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, it's like likely.
Well, keep in mind, everything below 4% is pretty much plus 4 is a unknown.
Yeah.
Right. That's the margin in these polls.
Wow.
So we really don't know anywhere from Calvert all the way down to, I don't even know. I'm not even going to try. Perez.
A lot of them still have 25 to 50% of the votes still need to be tabulated. So some of those could go either way, but it looks like it leans Republican House control.
Yeah.
But it's
so obviously it's not settled yet, but, it looks likely at this point. Do you think that the Republicans will retain control of the House?
It's more probable.
Yeah. And what would be, you know, for folks listening, what would be the major differences between a Republican controlled House and a Democrat controlled House with respect to the other Republican wins this election?
Well, I mean, obviously, in order to get anything passed, you need 60 votes in the Senate and a majority in the House. The current incentives in this age is you basically run your opposition. You, if you're the majority party and you have the opposite president, your job is to keep them from getting wins, right? That's how they see themselves.
So you just block everything they might bring in terms of legislation.
Exactly. And so that what that means is if it goes Democrat, we're going to see a lot of executive orders and not a lot of action. We'll see continuing resolutions. Spending won't get addressed. We won't see systemic reforms, probably. We might get some wins, right, out of a Republican administration in the Senate. Because the Senate's the bigger filter, you can pull away more Democrats in the House. That said, since basically the Boehner era to the Ryan era in the House, it's very difficult to get real changes in the House by process because the Speaker controls so much of the process at this point. Without some kind of systemic reform, which isn't going to happen by the Democrats if they're in the minority, that's not going to change. Depending on who they elect for Speaker, and if it's Johnson again, we're probably not going to see a change there either if the Republicans are in charge. Last part of that, even if Republicans gain the House, you still have 8 votes in the Senate you got to get out of the Democrats in order to get anything substantial changed. Now, you can do some things on the margin at a 51 vote. Some things don't apply to filibuster, such as some parts of the budgeting process. So you could, you know, do that in the absence of a nuclear option, meaning you take away the filibuster tradition out of the Senate.
Mm.
Because it's not mandated by the Constitution. That's just a tradition in the Senate.
I see. Yeah. And obviously the Democrats have been in favor of that in years past.
Yeah.
And
Republicans have too, to be honest. I mean, but it's always a little bit more muted at the Republicans because they're just by definition, by nature, more conservative and more traditional.
Sure.
And they're more likely to respect that tradition in many ways.
So if we are to expect the Democrats win the House, then most of the changes we hope to see within the federal government will have to come from the executive branch, and that'll be, you know, some of the regulatory reforms and stuff, putting members, you know, in the cabinet that are heads of agencies and advisors, and can, you know, we can hope to see maybe some of that Department of Governmental Efficiency do work in that way, but there won't be a lot of addressing of the budget problems, the deficit, the debt service that's now over $1 trillion or soon to be over $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. That stuff's going to kind of not be on the table.
That's going to be going to continue exactly as it is.
Gotcha.
Probably. And then what that also means is in the long run, when Trump is out, if there's not another Republican in to support that executive order agenda that he's going to bring to the forefront, we're basically going to see everything repealed come 2028.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's in some ways the presidential election is kind of the cultural victory and symbolic victory, while the actual policy victory is reliant on the House right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or how much of the presidential victory really matters is reliant on how much Republicans win the House.
And obviously, I mean, there was a ton of scrutiny and Republican resources, lawyers and such, poll watchers dedicated to making sure that election night was secure and there was no funny business. I mean, everyone's on high alert after 2020 and all the speculation on what happened there. Are those resources, do we know, are they still in place? Are the Republicans still monitoring these elections that are close to make sure that they're not smuggling in anything? Or, you know, do we have any information on that?
I haven't seen that. I mean, part of the variable that is at play as we're interpreting the election results is, and this is a huge dialogue online, right? A lot of speculation is, why was the turnout so different from 2020 to 2024?
Yeah, I actually just pulled up that image. We had it further down in the notes, but we can pull that up, Bennett.
That's all right.
One of the dialogues online here is looking back at the 2020 election, where did these 13 million voters disappear to? Did they have a rapture?
Yeah. Obviously not all the votes are in yet, but if you think about how close we are to all the votes being in, that line is not going to get that much taller from 2024.
What is that number? It's like 12 million or something like that. It's an enormous, enormous number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a couple variables that are not election fraud to note. It's probably true that universal absentee ballots in some counties drastically increase turnout. Yeah. It's probably true that the shutdown and some one of your most common problems with voting and getting people to vote, and I know this because I did a lot of GOTV efforts, is the trade-offs to the time it takes to go vote on election day. So if you have no trade-offs, you're more likely to go vote. Retirees vote at higher numbers than young working professionals. Why? Well, they don't have anything else to do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
If you're at work and you can't get off your shift or whatever, you're probably not going to go to the polls.
Yeah, much less if you have an absentee ballot delivered to you without even registering to vote, which happened in some states.
Mm-hmm.
That Now, a lot of people look at that and say that's voter fraud. And in a lot of senses, it's at least at minimum a claim of unconstitutional votes that if you brought up a lawsuit, which they did in many states that said, hey, you did this unconstitutionally. You sent people ballots who shouldn't have received ballots by the law of the land that passed by the legislature that can't be changed in the state of emergency. The judge is unlikely to say, okay, I'm going to disqualify all these votes because it's even hard to pick out which are those people.
Right.
Right. And I mean, obviously, it would be easy to pick out. You just have the list of pre-registration before the election administrator acted, and the list afterwards. You take out those votes, but you don't know once it's been processed, once it's been counted, whose ballots are whom's. Does that make sense?
So you'd have to almost go back, filter out the voter rolls, you know, of registered voters, filter out those ballots, and then count all over again.
Yeah. Well, even then, you wouldn't know whose ballots are whose.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. That's the nature of the secret ballot. Is once you take it out of the envelope, it goes into a separate stack. So you have your stack of ballots and you have your stack of people who voted. You count those two things separately to protect the anonymity of the vote. That's important. That's a key feature of our electoral system.
Yeah.
That process means you can't get those people back out of the system.
Right.
So in the sense of people who are complaining to say and have been complaining reasonably for 4 years now that was fraudulent is totally understandable and it's a sensible claim. Additionally, that legislators acted between 2020 and 2024 in many state legislatures to make changes. Now, in the state of Montana, for example, ID votes were already already a thing, but a lot of the changes to the electoral processing of registration were challenged by courts and then killed by our courts after the legislature acted.
Right.
Other states, I'm pretty confident Georgia is one of them, changed their processes too. We saw quicker returns. We saw maybe more reliable returns, less like sketchiness on the margin. That all could be there. And that all could be cultural changes too.
Florida also saw substantial election security laws come into place. And then obviously their returns were very quick. And a lot of counties that were previously blue, Miami-Dade specifically, were very red this election cycle also. And of course, they've had a huge influx of people to the state of Florida because of their policies over the last 4 years since COVID. You know, it's been a hotbed of people moving in there from other states, blue states particularly as well. So I'm not sure you can really, you know, say, oh, it was just the influx of Republicans into the state, but there seems to be a correlation there. And another interesting correlation, I don't know if you guys knew this, but all the states that Kamala won do not require an ID to vote. Every single one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She did win some states.
Don't
that
be
do.
Suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
They probably require an ID to register, though.
I don't know about that.
So we have a CBS report here. I actually just pulled it up. And it lists out the states that require photo ID for voting, states that request photo ID, and then states that don't require photo ID.
Right.
And
so there are 20 states.
It's 28 states that don't require photo ID.
And there are states in here that Trump did win. Mm-hmm. But every state that Kamala won is on the list of states that do not require an ID to vote.
And just noting, 28 states don't require photo ID. That's more than half.
That is a lot.
And out of the ones that states that request it and then the states that have hard requirements for it, like that's even split in half. So yeah. There's a difference between like the hard requirement versus the requesting of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, so you wonder.
That isn't even. Montana's not even on that list. It should be on the list of states that require.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
No, at least according to the CBS, it's that they request.
Yeah, they're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh. They require.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, assuming this list is correct.
Yeah.
assuming CBS News is correct.
Screw you, CBS. You done fucked up.
But it makes you wonder, some of these states that flipped red, especially at the state legislature level, will we see, you know, election-related legislation come through in these next sessions, you know, before the next presidential election that will continue to fortify that, or, you know, will we not? I don't know. It's an interesting, interesting question.
Well, and add an interesting dynamic here too, is the, what we have is the increased support of Trump or that shifted Republican over this. Pretty much every demographic, with the exception of the elderly and white college women, moved fairly drastically towards Trump. Like, it doesn't mean that Trump won those demographics, but he improved on those demographics.
And I think that could probably be attributed to, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, the elderly are generally reliant upon, you know, Social Security, at least much more broadly. They're receiving those benefits from the government. So, of course, they're not going to want to see those things affected potentially by an administration that has run on dramatically reducing the size of government. And then, of course, with you know, college educated women. Abortion is the number one topic, probably the only topic really that that population group is really focusing on as their most important issue. So I would see both of those things leaning blue naturally. But for everyone else, you know, it's probably economy, it's inflation, it's, you know, it's an insecure border, it's foreign policy, it's the meaningful things that the Trump administration made the center of their campaign.
Freedom of speech
as well.
Well, and and if you just like look at this chart, it shows how drastic the shift is. Pretty much all the like racial minority groups, massive shifts.
And
that's in comparison to everything else.
It's especially in comparison to where people's expectations were about these groups, mm-hmm. right? People had an expectation that Hispanics would go against Trump because of his stance on immigration. It turns out Hispanics are more sophisticated about their understanding of immigration policy than just illegal immigrants good because they're Hispanic, right?
Right.
That's kind of like a bit of a racist assumption, too.
Absolutely.
The Asian bloc is an interesting one to me. And I wonder to what degree Kamala dropping her Indian identity and embracing a black identity was a part of that, especially given the, you know, Vivek and I forget it, the one that wears bathrobes all the time.
Nikki Haley.
Sorry, that was a joke. It was a joke.
And J.D. Vance's wife
yeah.
is Indian.
Yeah, yeah. So like there's like a greater Indian identity in the Republican Party
mm-hmm.
that maybe is reflective of that. And then lastly, are they just more sensitive to just economic issues and inflationary pressures?
There's also a development there too where, you know, in recent years we had all the Asian stuff going on with like Harvard and everything. So a lot of the discrimination practices and the affirmative action practices that just kind of put Asians in the opposite category of all the other racial minority groups
right.
because they're like too good at college.
Right.
Well, yeah, they got DEI'd against.
Yeah,
totally.
Got, yeah.
That's exactly it. The woke ideology basically said, we don't believe in meritocracy. And here you have, you know, Asian American students and Indian American students and just families in general being like some of the most industrious, hardworking, skilled and intelligent populations that we have in the country. And they're the ones who are basically being told, doesn't matter how hard you work or how smart you are, we're going to give it to this person instead. Mm-hmm. So of course they would feel a little bit attacked by that.
One of the other narratives that is not confirmed by the exiting data that we're getting about who voted and how they turned out by area, right? These are, keep in mind too, these are guesses. These aren't known knowns, right? We don't know who these people voted for. We just know by where they, who voted where, and we know by who ended up voting this year and how much Trump won those districts. So just keep that in mind. But the women in general still move to the right.
Interesting.
In this environment, even given the pro-abortion thing.
Interesting.
Because and you see this in quite a few states where they passed pro-abortion stuff or they defeated pro-life stuff and then voted for Trump.
Yeah.
So that's, and this is a narrative across a couple different states. It's just that the male change was much larger than the woman's change.
Right.
To the right.
Yeah. Well, and that's a really interesting dynamic. It happened here in Montana. Mm-hmm. You know, we codified right to abortion and voted for Trump overwhelmingly. And I think that this is sort of an interesting paradox for someone who voted against Trump because he wanted a national abortion ban, quote unquote. Of course, he said he didn't all throughout, you know, his campaign, but the media ran with the fact that he did, which is completely false. Mm-hmm. But here you have, you know, his actions by installing Supreme Court justices that ultimately ended up repealing Roe v. Wade have returned it to the states, and you have states codifying it. So, yeah, while there might be a couple of states that are more conservative and are trying to pass legislation in the opposite direction, I think the overwhelming trend is in the direction of pro-abortion. So it seems to me like the concern there and the reasoning to vote for Kamala is like really, really unfounded given the election results.
And I think this demonstration from the Wall Street Journal really shows the difference in movement over time. So you have 2018, 2020, and 2024, and how women still move to the right amongst those groups, but men moved larger to the right until the point where they're actually winning, especially amongst the age groups of 18 to 29, which is a very interesting phenomena.
Yeah.
What is it about that? And to what degree is the medium the explanation? Because that's kind of the common one.
Sure.
Who did a better job actually going in front of those voters and being seen by those voters because they're not on cable television? And to what degree it was issue, like inflation, economy, things like that, that really drove that.
Yeah.
Same thing with, as we were talking about, black and Hispanic voters.
What do the numbers in the circles mean?
Oh, that's their percentage of from margin.
Okay.
Right? So if you look at like blacks typically vote 80% Democrat in 2018. By 2024, they're voting 67%.
Got it.
Hispanics 31 to 14. Keep in mind that if you go further back, and people forget this, Bush, for example, won the Hispanic vote by actually had greater than margin, right? that itself was a unique moment, right? You had a president who could speak Spanish and could get on Spanish television, right? It was a very different era moment. And then the other part is that is issue 2018 immigration is kind of back as a major issue from 2018 down a lot by 2020, right? That got taken up by COVID, got taken up by a lot of other issues. And now it's kind of back as a major issue facing the country on average for a lot of these voters.
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point about who did a better job of getting in front of some of these constituencies, you know, the young men, for example, I mean, Trump did a great job of humanizing himself and appearing on Flagrant with Andrew Schultz and Theo Vaughn and Nelk Boys and Aiden Ross and like
Joe all Rogan.
Of these, Joe Rogan, obviously, you know, all of these outlets where young men tend to find their content. And, you know, I think there was a really good case made for why young men should get out to vote if they want to try to unwind some of this anti-patriarchy narrative, protect their rights to free speech and all those things.
I think also a lot of these minority groups are just kind of sick of being pandered to. And you have Kamala going on to all the black podcasters like Charlemagne the God, Shannon Sharp, et cetera, and just going to them.
But the one with the NBA guys that we talked about too, that I forget the name
of. Yeah, I forget the name of it. But there's also a dynamic there is, who's the number one podcaster for black Americans? Joe Rogan.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So she's going on and pandering to those audiences there, but the number one podcaster for black demographic is Joe Rogan, and she didn't go on there, which is actually where most of them are, right? Yeah. So it's kind of strategically, even for what they're trying to do, they're not doing it in the
strategy
they should be.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I have a question. I don't know if anyone's seen yet, but do we know what the overall men turnout is compared to the last couple elections?
Very curious to know.
Because I mean, my Twitter feed was like all about people trying to get men out to vote. So I was curious to see those numbers, but I have not seen them yet.
Yeah, that's a good question.
So overall men.
Yeah. Yeah. Like as a whole.
While you're looking at that up, another notable, just kind of reading the data here, is that women, Trump did better with women than he has in the past, but he lost with college-educated women. So there's that bifurcation that exists, too.
Interesting.
Right.
What's going on in these colleges, guys?
There's a good question.
I think we know. Yeah, very interesting. What about the Muslim vote? I mean, I know that there was some, you know, a press conference that was held prior to the election in Michigan, which has a very dominant Muslim population. A number of figures, you know, came out and publicly endorsed Trump at that moment. Was that a primary demographic that moved?
I think so. And I actually have a video here from Breaking Points. They interviewed the mayor of Dearborn, which is, I think outside of Minneapolis, I think is the biggest Muslim population in the country.
Oh, wow.
And he had chosen not to endorse anybody, even though he's traditionally Democrat. And I thought he had some interesting things to say on why the Muslim vote went so heavy towards Trump.
Ultimately, my decision not to endorse stemmed on an issue of policy. We wanted a presidential candidate who would distance themselves from Benjamin Netanyahu and the ongoing genocide that's not only now in Palestine, but expanding in Lebanon. You know, I'm of Lebanese origin and descent. So is my wife of Lebanese and Palestinian descent. To date, almost every resident I know in this city has had a family member or loved one killed, injured, or displaced. And so when you see the election results, and I just put out my message earlier, I think the first thing to note is no votes are promised to any party or to any candidate. Votes must be earned. First and foremost, especially from a community that is suffering directly from a genocide. And I think that was the message that was sent loud and clear. The anti-genocide candidates lost in the city of Dearborn were, excuse me, the pro-genocide candidates lost in the city of Dearborn were those pro-justice anti-war candidates were the ones who were successful in the city of Dearborn. So if you look to Congresswoman Tlaib, she won. You look to local state representatives, they won. You look to our Supreme Court justices, the Democratic candidates, they won. It was the U.S. Senator who won by a very slim margin, the Democratic senator, and obviously Vice President Harris who lost.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so his take is that the Muslim population in general is just going for the more anti-war candidate, and that's their biggest issue. And it's an area where I've felt for a while, I've always seen this, is that I've always kind of felt that the Muslim and the Christian population actually have way more in common than differences. But there's always that kind of butting of heads that exists there, I think, going back to 9/11 and whatnot, where it kind of makes that alliance difficult. But I think a lot of the Muslim population has a place within the America First movement.
Certainly.
And I think we might see some of that here, but, you know, it's just kind of interesting to see that dynamic develop there.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe the other difficulty is the evangelical Christian mm-hmm. support of Israel obviously puts them at odds over that as well. So, but yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, and that's a beautiful thing to hear, that like the anti-war candidate is the candidate that they're voting for. Like, that's a great reason to vote for someone. Yeah.
Or somebody that like alludes, people that allude in that direction. Because I think there's a dynamic there where you're like, okay, well, the people that are part of the normal establishment, they're never going to be on your side of any war issues, because that's just not what they do. The neoliberal, neocon, the neo-bros, they're not going to be with that. And the Muslims are kind of are against the neo-bros.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine anything more offensive to an aware millennial or older Muslim than campaigning with Liz Cheney?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
The daughter of, and I don't know,
heir to the Cheney
princess
throne
of the neocons, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say anything else other than that. Yeah. I mean, you're like, it's got to be a turnoff.
Well, and that's got to be an area where you have reasons for a Kamala being just bad against all these different groups, is you have all these people that are like, no, I remember the Cheneys from 2 decades ago. What is happening here? Where you even have like John Stewart's trying to be like, Liz Cheney?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah. Right. They have to.
Wallace's justification that this gives them permission for libertarians or Republicans to vote for Kamala. It's just a terrible strategy, right? I mean, they think the Lincoln Project is mainstream Republicanism, and it isn't.
Well, I mean, I think it just goes to show how out of touch they are generally with like the actual attitudes of libertarians and conservatives. And I mean, I think that was evident very much in the reaction to this, the result of this election, both from the corporate press and just from like, you know, mainstream liberals, Kamala voters on the internet. And I think we should go ahead and play the Alex Jones clip where he compiles a lot of the, you know,
I do want to answer reactions. Bennett's question before we do that.
Oh, yes, okay, please.
Yeah, sorry to end your... That was a really great transition.
Well, thank you so much.
But I do want to note this. So we do have a Fox News voter analysis conducted October 28th, when the polls closed to November 1st, suggests that 52% of men aged 18 to 44 voted for Trump, while 46% voted for Kamala Harris. So that essentially reversed the split in the last election, when 51% of that group voted for Joe Biden and 45% voted for Trump.
Wow.
So that's the movement that we're talking about. It's most of the difference between election cycles that explains most of the phenomena in the end voter turnout. And I thought this last part of this is really interesting. Trump's campaign especially focused on young men, including blacks and Latinos, who are casting ballots for the first time. First-time voters preferred Biden by 2-1 margin in 2020, but narrowly went for Trump this time around, according. And that's huge, right? That's very weird. Typically, the classic model of electioneering is that new voters, when registered, will typically lean towards the dominant culture, which is more typical to be a, is more likely to be
left,
while, and then as they vote and get into the workforce and have to pay taxes, the more likely that they're going to move right. That might explain some of the women's vote here as well. This has an explanation of women's entry to the workforce now nearly getting to parity of men, where 89% of men are in the workforce in the ages between 25 and 54, while 78% of women are.
Yeah.
So the more you are in the workforce, the more sensitive you are to taxes, the more sensitive you are to government spending and regulation and workplace stuff,
yeah,
the more likely you're going to be, you know, Republican in many ways.
Very interesting. So the sort of feminist movement of getting women into the workforce may actually be trending them conservative, particularly in an economy where, you know, there's uncertainty around employment and high inflation, where costs are going up. I mean, and this actually parallels perfectly with a conversation I had with a gal last weekend, randomly at a bar, just someone I had just met. I asked her who she was voting for, and she said, well, reproductive rights are really important to me, but 25% of the people in my industry are unemployed, including myself, and I need a job. And that's the more important thing to me, and I think that Trump can do that, so I'm going to vote for Trump.
Well, so I guess more of my question was, I know more men voted for Trump, but like, was there more of a male turnout
was the total number of men voting.
Yeah, that's more what my question was. Sorry.
I'm trying to answer your question, Bennett, and it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Change the question. Have you thought about that?
All right. So Alex,
let's
Alex
move on.
Jones.
Let's move on to some liberal tears here. Now, yeah, we're going to indulge this just a little bit. Of course, there's a little bit of revelry for those of us on the right side of the political spectrum who have been very well vilified by the left in pretty much every outlet of media, corporate or otherwise online. So while we do want to focus on a unity message and bringing people together on issues that really matter, we're going to rub this one in just a tiny bit.
Starting in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
How did we get here? How did we get here? What in the Alice in Wonderland nightmares is going on right now?
All I can say is how fucking dare you?
If you voted for that man, if you voted for anybody other than Kamala and you live in one of the states that it was, you know, close, or if you didn't vote, fuck you.
How dare you?
It's not gonna happen.
Go Kamala. I chose family. I chose women. I chose America.
Is that Sean Penn?
How the fuck is this still happening? All I've ever known politically is hatred.
I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with you. I'm done with you and your mother and your sister. I'm just done with
you. Oh, is that a dude?
How other are my sister do to him?
I'm sorry. It's all my friends who are chosen warriors. I don't understand how scared of this man I am.
Isn't that kind
of
fake?
That's actually the question I want to raise. You can pause it, Bennett. I think we get the idea here.
How much of that is
question is, how much of it is just TikTok engagement farming?
Yeah, right. Some of those don't look that legit to me.
Yeah.
Or am I just a calloused human being?
I've been getting in group chats over the course of the last several days just inflows of more and more of these types of videos. And I feel like 80 to 90% of them are not real.
They just wanted to appear in the Weepy compilation.
Yeah. Well, because it's free views, free followers on TikTok, right? So this is the trendy thing to do if you're in that part of the algorithm. Some people now, there are some people that it's like, no, it's real. And a lot of these people are probably lefties that are upset, but they're all overplaying it. Like,
oh,
right,
yeah. Well, can you imagine if Trump had lost? Would there be any conservatives crying live on TikTok?
Maybe like three.
Maybe. But this is like very much sort of like, in my view, a very narcissistic thing to do. Like, come on. Like, okay. Like, I understand you're unhappy with the outcome of the election. And yeah, express your emotions and all that stuff. But doing it online is just so disingenuous to me.
Well, especially like a weepy, like, I got to, hold on. Tears aren't here yet. I got to set up my camera.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And then like get in front of me, like, oh, my frame dry? It's my lighting. Okay. You know, like, it's hard to... Yeah.
My chiropractor, who I follow back in Boston, he posted something. It's just like a blue flag, and it's like, I did not record myself crying today.
Marked safe from.
Marked safe.
So, and one of the dynamics here that I think is interesting is there is this reaction, and then the Republicans all go like, ha, look at these guys crying. And everyone goes like, how dare you, right?
Yeah.
To be clear,
how
the Department
of
Homeland Security in 2018 said libertarians are domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
That's actual, like, I'm worried about things because an actual government agency has said anyone who has a Gadsden flag and believes in the non-aggression principle is probably a domestic terrorist. That's like
Brennan said that on live TV.
Yes. So, like, if you're talking about who's oppressed here, I'm not saying we got to win the Olympics on it, but I think there's a lot more legitimate concern amongst those types than these folks who are like, oh, he's going to do a trans genocide. That doesn't seem likely, guys.
Where's the evidence for that? Yeah, like, just where?
Well, and all the evidence points in the opposite direction. Is who are the people getting shut down from their banking, from their social media, the people going to jail? Who are the... It's all been on the conservative side,
yeah,
right?
You've still got January 6th.
Or in right-wing cultural side, right?
Exactly. You've still got J6 protesters who were completely nonviolent, didn't hurt anybody, in prison, like being tortured at the moment.
People that worked for Trump.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. In large swaths.
Speaking of, the Jack Smith cases are all getting thrown out.
Notice that.
I It's crazy. I'm starting to think it might have been political.
How dare you?
It's crazy. I don't know.
I thought Ben was going to go for it.
I'm not your dancing monkey.
So we also have this from Reddit, right? Use their own stupid traditional views against them. Cancel all future plans with men and this is in the 2X chromosomes, like women's Reddit, right?
Wait, what? Why 2X chromosomes? Is that what makes a woman? Is that what a woman is?
What is a woman?
Yeah,
Joe?
Yeah, right.
Wow. Okay. All right. Just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yeah. A user says, use their own stupid traditional views against them. Say that you don't want sex before marriage. Say that you are waiting for the right man. They will be seething because they are sexually dependent on women who they call, quote, sluts. See, this is the best angle. Another user says, see, this is the best angle. No sex before marriage. Give them what they voted for. The response is Reddit lies based.
I mean, yeah, I know. I was like, incidental flood of trad wives incoming. I don't know. We'll see.
And this combo, it's in another thing called the 4B movement. I tried to find a good clip of this, but they're all very long. And at least one of them is women shaving their heads.
Yeah,
like, that seems more committed to the bit than crying, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And ranting about how men are to blame for this election cycle because they failed to protect women's rights, in this case abortion, by electing Trump. And this association between Trump as being anti-abortion was like the thrust of the campaign. So these are very clearly true believers because they've really missed what I think a dominant amount of the group of people did, because we're kind of looking at a very niche part of society, that these things are the same thing. By voting for the man, you're voting for oppressing women. By voting for the woman, you're voting for the liberation of women.
Right.
And the 4B movement, what it says is kind of like that one I posted, but just a little bit less traditional and a little bit less in the niche of based, is basically women who are opting out, saying, and this is a movement that started in Korea that I don't know how big it is. I don't know the relevance, but it has a lot of traction in feminist spaces online of women in Korea, because of the patriarchy, opting out of relationships with men and saying they're going to go their own way.
Right. Yeah, I think the four B's are words in Korean that mean like no dating, no sex, no marriage, and no kids. Mm. And so B, I think, is no. So it's for the four no's, basically, from the research that I did on it, which does seem like, you know, it's like a radical feminist movement. I don't know how widespread it is, but it obviously is picking up some traction here in the U.S.
We got major views on TikTok. Like, it's got really big. And from this whole, you know, we got to punish men. In Korea, as my understanding is, it's like a relationship to the overall picture of female suppression in Korea. In this case, it's we're going to punish men because Trump became president.
Yeah,
with a new 4B movement for America.
Now, could this backfire? Could this backfire?
Well, I think it does raise. I got an interesting tweet here from Richie Torres, who talks about how Donald Trump has no greater friend than the far left, which has managed to alienate historic numbers of Latinos, Blacks, Asians, and Jews from the Democratic Party with absurdities like defund the police or from the river to the sea or Latinx. There is more to lose than there is to gain politically from pandering to a far left that is more representative of Twitter, Twitch, and TikTok than it is of the real world. The working class is not buying the ivory tower nonsense from the far left that the far left is selling. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes into with all of these like niche communities within the left, whether it be the 4B stuff that's going on and whatever's going on Reddit over there. But also just things like Latinx, right? It's like, okay, we're supposed to adopt this phrase because we're no longer going to use gendered language within Spanish, which has a gendered language. So right. We're going to like recreate words and make it so that, oh, Hispanics, you can't use those words anymore because that's insensitive. While we're still pandering to the Latinos and or the Latinx.
I know words. I have the best words.
and Richie Torres is a Democrat from New York, representing the Bronx, I believe.
Yeah. He's a congressman.
Yes,
right?
The Bronx. Yep. So this isn't like it's coming from someone from outside the left. This is the left talking to itself, and that's been a big part of the fallout this week is how to actually understand this. And we have the liberal tiers, and then we have like the actual insightful assessment from Democratic insiders. For example, we got another one from a strategist, Chris Kofinis. He's a Democratic strategist, former chief of staff under Joe Manchin, right? Joe Manchin is like the blue dog Democrat. Quote, this is a historic disaster of biblical proportions. The Democrat Party, as it is dead. This is a historic realignment. There were Reagan Democrats. There are now Trump Democrats. That's like a whoo, mm-hmm. whoo. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. And it's basically, and it's a condemnation of the urban center Democrat approach of we're not going to talk about issues that white middle class working people care about, that working class people of the minority communities are caring about, and we're going to focus on, you know, a broad, generic, celebrity fueled, you know, know nothing campaign that isn't focused on policy.
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, one of the first stories I saw in the New York Times, I think it was even late on election night or first thing the next morning, was, you know, Trump's victory was fueled by Latinos and working class people. Mm. So if you're not willing to talk to them and engage on issues they care about, of course you should not expect to court their votes. And obviously this speaks again to the detachment, the out of touch nature of the left, of thinking, oh, we can just win them over with glitz and glamour and brat girl this and that. It's just, it's not working for people who are actually suffering from real problems in their lives right now.
Mm-hmm. No joke. And then we have the corporate press and their kind of reaction to this whole thing. We have a really great clip. Let's see if we can get it to play from CNN.
So one thing that I think stands out also, we can't have this conversation a little bit, to your point, Dana, is that maybe it's not so much Democrats' policies or messaging or the words that they use specifically, but there is an entire right-wing media ecosystem.
Yes.
It doesn't exist on the left.
Yes. Not
it
exist.
Does not exist in the center or mainstream. And people are getting their information in very different ways now. And Donald Trump and Republicans and Elon Musk and Joe Rogan know exactly how to reach Americans where they are, regardless of age and demographic. And that played a big role in this because of the fact of, like, the whether it was disinformation, misinformation, or different propaganda that they were feeding to the American public that made them feel the way they did. And that, and the American public felt as though that they were being heard by Donald Trump.
And it was.
That's very true. I think she nails it.
It is framed in a way that's like, oh, these, well it's framed in a ridiculous way though. The left has no center, like no media game at all. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on.
That's all we're talking about.
I mean, I would say they don't have any independent media game. Their entire media game is locked up inside of a dying system that is the corporate press that is not reaching people in record numbers. Yeah, like,
which
failing.
Is the big, that's the big dynamic of this entire election, is in a lot of ways, it's much more like we're seeing the death knell go into the corporate press and their control over the election process. Like, they're still going to be around a bit longer, but their power is so gone, mm-hmm. especially in the aftermath of Elon Musk buying Twitter.
Right.
Right. But then when we're looking at it, it's like, no, presidential candidates from here on out, they have to go on the biggest podcast in the world. They have to. They have to go on Flagrant. They have to go on Joe Rogan. They have to do these. They have to do the comedian circuit.
Totally.
Which is now the late night circuit. It doesn't matter going on Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or any of these guys, Colbert anymore. They just do not matter anymore. It matters to go on Tim Dillon, Andrew Schultz, and Joe Rogan.
Thank God.
They're the late night.
And I'm not sure is that they're not even, quote, coded right wing per se, right? This is a kind of a, I think, a misnomer from her approach of how she's criticizing it, right?
Sure.
The when talk radio was the only voice for the right, that was how people coded talk radio, right? They said talk radio is a right-wing institution. Now, there were left-wing talk radio shows. They just weren't as popular. But at the same time, you had the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, all these mainstream media outlets at the time were all left-wing coded. So this coding of what it really means to be that, that's a subjective evaluation of the person perceiving it. In this case, she perceives all of podcasting now as being, quote, right-wing because that demographic went that way. And I think that's like post-fact sensible, but also it kind of misses the point, which is that the Democrat Party disenfranchised those people.
Exactly.
They very specifically did not try to cultivate those people.
Exactly.
They didn't go to the Libertarian Convention and try to do something, cut deals with that demographic. They didn't go to Joe Rogan and try to make those attempts because they brought a candidate that was historically unpopular to all those people to start with. So they were already working behind, and then they didn't try to cultivate it.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, I think comedy in general has trended right wing because it's been the right wing that's been defending free speech. Mm. And comedy has been doing the same thing. So there's this natural alliance that has occurred over the course of the last several years that has created this natural, you know, coalition there. And the left is just, I mean, we always joke they can't meme. Like, there's a not a lot of like good comedy that's coming out of the left.
No, they can just cry. That's all they do.
Cry on demand.
They cry and they call the cops on like whatever party and whatever fun is being had.
Yeah.
And people want to be part of the engaging fun now.
Yeah.
Like that was the example of the Madison Square Garden stuff. Is everybody's like, oh my God, Tony Hinchcliffe is going to sink the campaign. It's going to be Tony Hinchcliffe's fault because he made a Puerto Rican joke. He's like, no, Trump actually did exceptionally well with Puerto Ricans.
He did. And no one was happier for that than Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah. Shane Gillis had a thing about how Tony Hinchcliffe is like the Archduke Ferdinand of World War III, right? Yeah. Like him making a Puerto Rican joke like cascades into World War III.
Well, Rogan was saying on his interview with Dave Smith yesterday that they were at the Comedy Mothership, which is Rogan's comedy store that Tony Hinchcliffe does his shows at. But they were there on election night, and Tony's just sitting there like, see, he's doing better with Puerto Ricans than ever. he's just like really hoping that that's the case.
But that's part of like the male-female thing too, right? If you're reliant on female votes and then like the culture you demonstrate in your election process is more fainting couch, is more like, how dare you, as opposed to, huh, funny joke. He's not being serious. He's a comedian. That's a more masculine approach to how you treat speech and comedy and these sorts of things. And so the expression of that is in the vote. That is probably the biggest white pill of the election season, right? You could tell a joke about Puerto Rico and then Puerto Ricans were like, ah,
good one.
You know, rather than being like, how dare, I'm going to vote against you now. Although the celebrities all signaled the opposite. They did the fainting couch thing.
As did the Puerto Rican rapper who had previously endorsed Trump. He rescinded his
Bad
endorsement.
Bunny.
Yeah. And went the other way.
And that just shows you how jaded they are, right? Just how strategic that is. How it has nothing to do with principle. Has nothing to do with real political calculation. It has everything to do with public signaling to who you think your base is.
Right? Well, it's also a crazy thing, too, where you have people like AOC, who was one of the forefront of the hating on Tony Hinchcliffe people, saying that she's a fan of Kill Tony and has gone to live recordings of Kill Tony before, but this was too much.
Just too
much. Like, you can't have it both ways.
No.
If you've seen Kill Tony, you know what you're in for.
Yeah. Meanwhile, she's like, I grew up in the Bronx. I have a thick skin. I like edgy comedy. Like, well, obviously you don't.
Yeah, obviously not. Or you're lying.
I was going to say, she might, and she's just, you know, playing the part. Like I said, when we showed the clip of her in the Walls, I was like, she's a terrible actress. Like, she was clearly just doing the fainting couch. Like, I don't actually think she was offended. I think she's just pretending to
be. Well, she was trying to pretend like she didn't know who Kill Tony was while also knowing who, like, Tony Hinchcliffe was. Where she's like, yeah, I think that's a comedian, Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah, right.
It's really disappointing.
But she's also a fan. It's like, what are you?
What are you doing?
Wow. And that, one other part of that narrative is authenticity. The authenticity as like your branding, your marketing, everything has to come across as authentic if you're going to be taken seriously by younger generations. That is the currency of our time.
Yes.
The Trump campaign seemed to understand that. Well, the Kamala campaign, if they didn't understand that, didn't execute on it, or Kamala was such a flawed candidate, she failed to come across as authentic, even in the situations where it was most friendly.
Right.
I mean, like that interview when she had Tim Walz there, she didn't come across as authentic, even though it was a super friendly interview.
Her first interview also.
Yeah.
Well, it's also classic media training is to keep repeating the same talking point over and over again to all the different outlets and hope it sticks. And but now we have the internet, and when you just see compilation videos of I'm from a middle class family, you look crazy.
And like you don't have any substance at all.
No, like, it's just like there's nothing there. Where it's like Trump repeats himself too, but he repeats like certain narratives and themes that he tries to strike. But
I was on the phone with a very rich man, a very powerful man. I saw the rocket coming down.
It's the gantry. They call it the gantry. But like,
gives it a big hug.
But he changes up the narrative, and he flows it. He weaves things in all the time and kind of changes it up where it's much more like, because we repeat ourselves on the podcast with the same talking points that we kind of have. But like, we try to like weave it in with whatever we're doing, and we have like themes that we're tackling. Trump's more so hitting the themes while she's still hitting the corporate talking points.
Right.
Which is
She's hitting the script.
Right. Where, and that's the different dynamic where it's like, yeah, Trump repeats himself, but he's like thematically repeating himself, where she's just like, this is my script and I am going with the script no matter what. And this is why I have to have controlled interviews, because there can't be anything that goes outside of the script. And, you know,
and this theme transcends the broader level of politics in general. The left is the script and the right is improvisational. It's dealing with real life and dealing with uncertainty and risk. And the left has to control everything in order for their narrative to work, because it's unnatural.
That's how machines purely work.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So the other narrative that formulated is you can blame MIM, and then very specifically the corporate press, at using their proxies for minorities, blamed minorities, especially minority men. And this is a clip from Morning Joe doing exactly that.
I just say really quickly, too, Democrats need to be mature and they need to be honest. And they need to say, yes, there's misogyny. But it's not just misogyny from white men. Mm-hmm. It's misogyny from Hispanic men.
Right.
It's misogyny from black men. Things we've all been talking about, who do not want a woman leading them. Might be race issues with Hispanics. They don't want a black woman as president of the United States. You know, the Democratic Party, I've always found, when you're sitting around talking, they love to just sort of balkanize everybody into these separate groups and say, oh, white people don't like women and black people. No, it is time for the Democrats to say, okay, and you and I have talked about this before, a lot of Hispanic voters have problems with black candidates.
Right.
A lot of other Hispanics, you got some that
don't like each other. And right. And some of the most misogynist things I've heard going on this Get Out the Vote tour came from black men. I mean, misogynist things. So you're absolutely right. It's not simplistic. And we've got to have real honest conversations about it.
Well, and this just echoes the, you know, there's a problem with the brothers. The brothers have to get out and vote for it. Some of you just aren't accepting that there's going to be a woman president. Yeah.
Pretty good Barack from Obama impression.
Not bad.
Now let me be clear.
I think the Democrats kind of set themselves up for this failure because of the way they draw their coalitions and the way they brand themselves internally, where they can't deal with people having individual identities separate from their group identity. And so when you have a broad-based appeal, such as lower-class people wanting a job and not wanting an inflationary environment, you're now in a situation where low-income voters, regardless of race, are going to be more appealed to that, when, especially in the absence of having a lower-class policy agenda for them, you to cultivate that. Bailing out people with college loans is not appealing to anybody who has a job.
No.
Right? Like, that just appeals to people who are working as baristas who got a women's studies degree, right? So, like, it's that challenge of the Democrats' positioning is self-inflicted. And the fact that they would then turn that around and say, no, it's the inherent racism of our own people. And how is that going to get them back? I mean, Al Sharpton being, of course, that he's literally the king of blacks, right? That's like his whole role, is they roll him out and they say, Al Sharpton, you can speak for all black people now, right? And he's like, yeah, well, they're all, well, he's still trying to hold on to the title, I guess. His role here is to very specifically say his own community has no legitimate concerns that Kamala failed to address. His own community is actually just misogynists and racists.
It's all they've had for over a decade was shame, and the shame tactics aren't working anymore. People are done with the shame tactics. Yes. Like, it's all the cult had. Was you're either an outsider or you're an insider, and if you want to be cool, you're an insider, and otherwise you get publicly shamed and removed from everything, and people are just done with that.
Yeah.
Like, it's outlived its usefulness for them, but they're still trying to hold on to the only tactic that they have.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what he's revealing in this clip is his community now is the elite, is the system.
It always has been.
Always has been. And they just tried to use these race tactics and this race baiting. Al Sharpton's the king of race baiting in order to kind of get people in line. But nobody cares about Al Sharpton anymore.
Yeah.
And people are done with the machine.
Yeah.
It just, in record numbers.
It just fucking kills me that it's like, we need to be honest. The honesty is, everyone's misogynist. It's like, okay, this is why you lost. Like, you're not even understanding now.
Yeah,
it's the meme. How could Trump have won? Don't people know he's a Nazi?
It turns out, especially for younger people, if you call someone a Nazi, they go like, I've been called a Nazi on my, you know, online my entire life.
Since I was 10.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It doesn't mean anything to me anymore because, you know, I have no association with it. So that's another way these narrative formations are so out of touch. You have an inauthentic candidate forced on the Democrat Party. That big chart of that 12 million votes, why didn't people re-register? Well, maybe because they were uninspired by a candidate like Kamala Harris who didn't have a primary.
Just don't want women to be president.
Yeah, beyond the fact that you can fall out of registration really easy. People. There's a lot of people who move. The people who move a lot are the least likely to vote because you have to re-register. It just takes extra steps. If that's a lot of those people who got ballots and all the things we explained with that, those people are least likely to be inspired by or get motivated to vote for a candidate who, I mean, on every level, and this is another white pill that we could take away. On every level, the Kamala campaign really failed to pick up and do the job of a campaign. And then it turned out that way in the actual ballot where Trump won all these things, partially because Trump did good campaigning too. So we don't want to take that away, but also because Kamala failed the campaign. And that, you know, we did a whole skiff episode about how democracy is the gun that failed, right? And all the problems with democracy. But in that sense, our representative democracy might be functioning in a lot of ways because the candidate that actually tried to do something to appeal to voters won, and the one that failed to, you know, lost.
And I would
it tried
say
to run on basically absence of an idea.
Right. And I would say I was a little bit cynical about whether or not it would even work. Because, I mean, from what we're seeing, obviously, you know, maybe we're in an echo chamber, but I think we and a lot of people on the internet, on X and elsewhere, do see the reality of kind of how people are feeling, what's happening, because we're not watching the mainstream or the corporate press who is putting out the leftist narrative. But I have to say I was like not super confident that it would work.
I agree.
There are so many ways that I think things could be manipulated, right? And whether or not, and I would just, I don't want to take away from your white pill because it's a wonderful thing. And I agree with you. But there are still ways for the system to fight this movement.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we need to be super on high alert about what those things are and what the things might be coming down the road are. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in future episodes.
We could talk about it a little bit now. I'd at least tease it. I mean, so one of those things is the 15th Amendment, which we brought up in the live stream, right? To what degree are we going to see lawsuits and lawfare kind of carry over? Now, we do have some of those kind of being nipped in the bud immediately. But we also have, you know, we got the Lincoln Project saying we're not done. You know, so that campaign will continue to undermine the narrative formation around the Trump presidency as it goes on. So that's they're not going anywhere. You had the 15th Amendment is another one. And then you have staffing, which is what our other video is going to be releasing soon after this one, because we're now doing our topical rather than our weekly roundup. So keep an eye out for that one, because infiltrating the administration and then undermining within is the next, you know, best tactic that they have in order to prevent substantial gains within the executive branch, even regardless if the Democrats don't control Congress.
Right, yeah. Right.
Let's queue up. We can close out here with the Jimmy Kimmel one. I think that's the pinnacle of, do you really want to be on this side?
How high is he?
High on tears.
You see those eyeballs? Oh, yes.
High on tears.
Let's be honest. It was a terrible night last night. It was a terrible night for women, for children, for the hundreds of thousands of hardworking immigrants who make this country go.
All the guests at these parties.
For healthcare, for our climate, for science.
Why is he clapping?
For please journalism, clap. For justice, for free speech. It was a terrible night for poor people, for the middle class, for seniors who rely on Social Security, for our allies in Ukraine, for NATO, for the truth.
The truth.
Democracy and decency. And it was a terrible night for everyone who voted against him. And guess what? It was a bad night for everyone who voted for him, too. You just don't realize it yet.
You just don't get it.
How is it definitionally bad for democracy when the democratic process just happened? Right? Like, how is that bad for, like, ipso facto, the democratic process happened? What? And then you're saying it's bad for democracy. What's even going on?
I feel like the democratic process won because the candidate that was not elected to anything via democratic process
was the one
that lost the democratic election.
Exactly. Right.
I know you've all seen the video where it's a compilation. In fact, I think you shared it, Kyle, where they replace all these clips of people talking about threats to democracy with the word bureaucracy. This is an exact
gets our democracy case. Gets changed to our bureaucracy.
Yes.
So there's Donald Trump is a threat to our bureaucracy.
Correct.
Correct. Trump is a, correct.
On media yeah. outlets.
That was a good one. I actually almost had that in the clips, but it was a little bit much.
Yeah, well, it's very true. And I mean, I think that's a perfect use case for it. But yes, yeah. Well.
But let me just, the inoculation of that, I don't think we're going to see legal immigrants be deported. I don't know what he's talking about there. That's like false.
We're not going to see a trans genocide.
If anything, the worst thing for Ukraine was the Ukrainian war, which has annihilated a generation of Ukrainians and driven, you know, the women who left into prostitution. Probably not great. That was an act provoked by and caused by the Biden administration when they sent Kamala Harris to the Bucharest summit and then who showed up and said, hey, let's put Ukraine in NATO. That's what provoked the war. So if you have questions about that, check out Liam's interview with Scott Horton, dropped last week. It's an amazing interview, really great.
And we'll link it at the end of the show.
Yeah. Decency is on the ballot, guys.
Decency.
Decency.
Or it was, and decency lost.
But indecency is just so much fun.
Wait a minute. Who's more decent? The guy who went on the comedy podcast and made jokes, but it was largely kind of a square guy, right? And then for the lady who had Nicki Minaj campaigning for
Cardi B.
Cardi B.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah. Like these are the
twerking for democracy.
The dealers of our most degenerate parts of our culture are the ones campaigning for the other side. What are we talking about when we mean decency?
Yeah. Well, we mean an entirely different thing than he means.
And I'm not saying that Trump's perfect. I'm not defending every action he's ever made. But I'm just saying, like, it's obviously a more complicated story than decency versus non-decency. Come on.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, very true.
Control versus non-control. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So as we close out here, we're going to be doing a Skiff episode. We should pitch a Skiff episode where for members, you will get extra content. And we're going to be diving into the deconstruction of the deep state and Donald Trump's 10-point plan to eradicate the deep state. We're going to be diving into that piece by piece.
Oh, I love it.
Is it going to work? Wait. I'm going to have some criticism. So it should be fun.
It will be good. Yeah. Please join us in the Skiff. If you are not yet a member, go to humanreactionpod.com to find out how you can access all of our exclusive content. For everyone who has been watching and listening, thank you so much. We appreciate you as always, and we will see you in the next episode.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.